Hello there. Welcome into this Thursday edition of the Daily Perspective Podcast. It's little old me, Mark Congleton, your sometimes humble host, for this almost hour of observation, insight, and absurdity for Thursday, the 25th day of June, 2020. Thanks for joining me. I wasn't really coming apart, but thanks anyway. Sometimes I just shouldn't say the things that cross my mind. I'm actually a walking dad joke. It says so on my driver's license. It is the Thursday edition of the podcast. Hopefully you are doing well and yours as well. And that life is treating you nicely in spite of the weirdness that's going on all around us. I don't have much as far as personal news to lead off with today. I just, yesterday was kind of a, sort of a dull day. I had a haircut appointment. I got my hair cut. Whee! And I got out and I had some lunch and it was kind of nice to get away from the studio for a while and not be working when I went. That was kind of nice. And also, what is it? I got the propane tank refilled. My wife gets this phone call last night. We're, you know, in that last few minutes before we turn off the lights, and we've been playing with the pup and talking about this and that and just yawning and wrapping things up before we, you know, finally just crash and burn for the day. And she gets this phone call, and she's walking around with her phone talking to, she was talking to our son, Joe, who's, he's looking at a teaching job in Texas now, which means he's going to be leaving New Orleans and going to, I think it's Galveston. I believe it's Galveston, Texas. Anyway, I'm dad. I'll find out all the details when everything is ready for me to learn. That's how it is. He talks to his mom all the time. He talks to me. Hey, guess what I did? And so I'll find that out. Anyway, but she comes back and says, it looks like the grill's on fire. And so I got up and went to the deck and looked at the grill, and sure enough, one of the burners was on. And apparently when I hooked the tank up and checked the connections and fired it up to make sure it was working, I didn't turn both of the burners off. I just turned one of them off. And so since about noon until a bit after 9 o'clock last night, the fresh tank that I put out there had been burning on one of the burners at full blast. So there's a good chance that I may be going back very soon to get another tank of propane. Because I'm an idiot. Too distracted. I don't know. I don't know what had me sidetracked, but something obviously had me thinking beyond that to something else, and I just missed something. That's apparently what happened. That's the excitement from yesterday. That was pretty much my day. Just that and puttering around. I got to the garage yesterday and started the process. Yeah, the one I told you about Monday. Wednesday I finally got started on that process because it took me a little time to get some things done. So yesterday I started the rearrangement and organization process to turn the garage into a workshop for taking the top end of the Miata's motor apart and replacing all the seals and gaskets. And yeah, you know what? Some people carve little birds out of wood. Some people do flower arrangements. Some people work in their gardens. I coop myself up in a garage and take engines apart and put them back together again. And thanks to my buddy Mike, I can do that. He told me a few years ago, I was complaining about there being an issue and it looked like something was going to have to be done. And I didn't have the money to pay somebody to do it. And he said, that's really not that hard. And I looked at him and said, you know, that's what the people who work on automatic transmissions say. Oh, that's nothing. And for the rest of us, automatic transmissions are voodoo. We don't know how those things work. They're magic of some kind because you just get in the car, you put it in D, and it just works. And the rest of us are like, woo. But the guy who works on them is like, yeah, there's all these valves and there's the fluid and the viscosity has to be right. And there's filter and there's actually clutches, but they don't look like, they're not like the clutches you, oh, stop. Just stop. My head is spinning. I'm getting a headache. Does it work when you put it in D? Well, yeah. Well, that's all I need to know. That's how it is with an automatic transmission for both of us. And he said, no, seriously. It, when you're working on a car's motor, it's a lot like building a jigsaw puzzle. But the advantage is you get to take the puzzle apart first before you put it back together again. And I thought about that and it hit me. He's absolutely right. So I bit my lip and worked up the nerve and just dove into it. And before long, I had pulled the cylinder head off of that motor and sent it out to be redone. And I put it back together again. And I actually accomplished something that I never thought that I would accomplish in my life. And now I don't have any qualms about diving into it at all. I'm actually thinking about pulling the entire motor. But that's a project for the wintertime, I think. At any rate, that project got started yesterday, and I was out. I'm thinking through it already this morning, and the next steps of it, what have to happen. And hopefully tomorrow I can report to you that I am much, much further along in the process, because as I looked at things with an eye towards what I was thinking of doing, I realized, oh, this is going to be simple. So, good. That'll get happening tomorrow. What else is there? Oh, yeah. Went over to Parlay yesterday. Actually the day before. I've had a Parlay account. A lot of people are calling it Parler. Parler.com. It's the word Parlay. You know, from, you remember the Pirates of the Caribbean? Parlay? Remember? Yeah, it's Parlar. And it's kind of like Twitter. But it's a free speech site. So I got involved in it a while back, and I'm also over on Gab. I don't go to Gab much anymore because I never was seeing anything there or seeing anyone there that really was giving me anything I could be interested in. So I haven't been there, but Parlay is getting a lot of attention in the last week because of how Twitter has been censoring people on the right. They've been letting people on the left get away with bloody murder on the site and applying a different set of rules, or actually not applying the rules to people on the left, but applying them harshly to people on the right. And they've been censoring posts and putting warnings on posts and the like. And I thought, you know what? I think I'll head over there, over to Parlay and see what my little setup over there looks like and how long it's been since I've actually done anything with it. Oh, it'd been quite a while. But I went back over and I set up an account under my name. You can just search for it. It's under my name, Mark Congleton, all run together. While I was there, I set up a separate account just for Daily Perspective Podcast. So you can look up Daily Perspective Podcast. Yeah, that's a lot of letters, I know. But you can find that over on Parlay. And I have been echoing what I've been finding elsewhere. For example, like when I sit and cruise Twitter and I'm looking at things, if I find things that are interesting, amusing, or whatever, I will share what I find to the Daily Perspective page on Facebook and now also to Parlay, because I don't know that it's actually going to happen, but I have this feeling that it could, and that is that Twitter may just go full bore commie on us and start censoring everything, not just some things, but everything they don't like, and they'll set up algorithms, and if you mention anything conservative, then your post will get covered with a warning and things like that. I have a feeling that the human intervention is eventually going to go away, and they're just going to go full-bore leftist on us, and they're not going to care about freedom of speech because it's a private business, but over at Parlay, it's a freedom of speech site. It you have to comply with the rules of the Constitution, the First Amendment, and they also say they apply rules from the FCC. I'm not sure what rules that they're referring to, but that's what they say. But a lot of people besides me have done that. Conservative commentators, politicians, others, they're shifting over to the social media platform that competes with Twitter. A slew of Twitter users looking for a social media platform they believe won't censor them, including Representative Devin Nunes, commentator Jesse Kelly, former Navy SEAL Robert O'Neill, others they announced they've established accounts over on Parlay. The chicks on the right, the girls I refer to from time to time, they've had an account. Like they did like me. They went over to begin with and set one up and did a few things for a couple of days and just, this is why. I've got these other ones and they're active and that's where everybody is. And then they got blocked. Mock and Daisy are the two ladies, and Mock got suspended on Twitter. She got locked out of her account for something that really was innocuous and would not have gotten a liberal locked out. And she said, well, doggone it, I'm going over to Parlay with these other people and see what that's all about. And so now everything they put up is going over to Parlay. And Evan Nunes told the Federalist co-founder Sean Davis that Parlay will set you free. Jesse Kelly said, just got the Parlay app. I'm assuming none of us are long for this site. And you can find him at Jesse Kelly DC there. Devin Nunes, let's see, did he put in what his was? No, he didn't. Let's see. Benny Johnson, who's the chief creative officer over at Turning Point USA, yesterday said, 10 years on Twitter, I'm done. Disgusted with the censorship on this platform. Twitter is now so aggressively anti-free speech, it's not fun anymore. Just got on the Parlay. I keep saying Parlor because that's the way it's spelled. Parlay app. It's refreshing. Not like this communist gulag dumpster fire. He's referring to Twitter. He actually posted that on Twitter. Good for him. Rand Paul's wife, Kelly, has set up a... she and both of them have. They're over on Parlay. She said you can follow her and Rand Paul over at Parlay. She is Rand Paul and she is K-Paul 5. She can actually change that to Kelly Paul. She can go in. There's right now with the number of users there are about 1 million users on the platform. She can actually go in and probably get her exact name before somebody jumps on it. Some idiot jumps on it to keep her from being able to use it, which will happen. Let's see. So if you want to get on Parlay, you go over to parler.com. You set up an account and they'll assign you an ID, and you can go in and edit that ID and actually just run your first and last name together. And that can be your ID for now. Until somebody with your same name signs up, or if you're high profile enough, somebody will camp on your name and keep you from being able to use it. That happens in social media all the time. Now, Parlay was founded back in 2018. It's become a platform favored by supporters of President Trump. Their description reads, Parlay is an unbiased social media focused on real user experiences and engagement. Our content is moderated based off the FCC and Supreme Court of the United States, which enables free expression without violence and a lack of censorship. Parlay never shares your personal data. A lack of censorship is where you may end up having issues, because since they don't censor, you may find information or material objectionable to you. And, you can block just like any other social media site. You can block and you can do all kinds of things. You can silence people. You can mute people. You can block people. And if you don't want to see the content, then you don't have to see the content. It's just like real life. You just don't go the places that you object to. You just don't go there. So you don't see that stuff. It's not like somebody comes in and nukes the store you hate. You just don't go there. If you don't like the fact that there's a bar down on the corner, you don't go there. So, but you allow them the freedom to see if they can survive. And if they can survive, then they survive. And if they don't, they don't. And that's kind of this whole situation is in social media, it should be that way. Now, over at Gab, immediately after Gab was set up, because they don't censor, people started saying, look at that, there's Nazis over there. There's KKK members over there. There's anarchists. There's all this stuff over there. There's everything. And not all of that is true. But the thing is that the stuff that they're objecting to is so minuscule. There's so little of it. Because actually in real life, there's not much of it. So the stuff that everybody is saying is wrong with sites like Gab and Parlay is actually a tiny, tiny, tiny microscopic percent of what's actually there. They're just hacked off because it is there. It's that old saying that liberals are all about diversity of opinion and celebrating other people's opinions. But they're shocked and insulted when they actually realize people have other opinions besides theirs. And that's what's happening with alternatives to Twitter and Facebook. I just mention all this because the show is there, Daily Perspective Podcast. I'm there, Mark Congleton, and there's an option. You are listening to the Thursday edition of the Daily Perspective Podcast, the 25th day of June 2020. And I'm glad you're along today. Thanks for being part of the fun. Over at Project Veritas, they're releasing another video. They've been inside of Facebook. And it shouldn't be surprising what they're coming up with, but dang. I'm just looking over an email I got from James O'Keefe. And it's about their second Expose Facebook video. It features a new whistleblower discussing rampant political censorship by Facebook content moderators. And it also exposes the biases held by these Facebook content moderators. And here are a few examples. I'm not going to go into all of it. This is, yeah, there's no reason. I didn't have this planned. It just popped up in my email just a few minutes ago. First up, a Facebook whistleblower says, I was seeing them interfering on a global level in elections. Another insider says that Facebook categorizes Trump supporters with hate organizations, Hitler, Nazis, MAGA. So if you support Trump, then they look at you as part of a hate organization. The former Google HR contractor, who is now senior human resources business partner at Facebook, actually said no one has the white man's back anymore. A Facebook content moderator named Israel Amparan, quote, Trump supporters are effing crazy ass a-holes. He also says Trump supporters are a bunch of bleepy effing rednecks. This is the content, a Facebook content moderator. Someone employed and paid by Facebook. That is someone who should be impartial and neutral. And that's their attitude. Another Facebook content moderator named Cassie Simo says, Americans should take Iran's $80 million bounty on President Donald Trump. If it's going to save the country, why not do it? So a content moderator at Facebook named Cassie Simo is literally advocating insurrection, assassination of the President of the United States. It's amazing. Absolutely amazing. But this is what we're facing, and this is why people are flocking to other services. Just FYI. And why is this all happening? I talked about that yesterday. Remember what I said. This is all about
fundamentally transforming the United States of America.
Because of that man. Because Americans got emotionally involved in the election that they thought was going to be monumentally historic. The first black man to be elected president. They ignored all the warnings about him and his cohorts, his influencers. They ignored everything that was said about Barack Obama. All of the warnings. And they voted for the guy twice. And now we have what we have. There was 8 years where they got their confidence built up. They completely expected Hillary Clinton to be elected president so that they could continue what they were doing, which was basically ignoring the Constitution of the United States and pushing forward with an administration of almost complete lawlessness. They thought they had it in the bag. And when they didn't, that's when everything started falling apart. We're hearing about now with what's been happening. You know what's bad is I can see the guy's face and his name won't come to my mind. We're seeing the memos that were taken by FBI agents in the meetings. We're seeing all of this information come forth. And you're shouting the name at me right now. It's not helping. Trust me, it's not. The thing is that we're seeing Michael Flynn. That's it, because I've got him right here in the list. It's my next story up after this one. They may have, the appeals court has ordered his dismissal, but we're finding out about what was happening in a meeting which took place in the Oval Office with Barack Obama, with Joe Biden, with some others, and they talked about getting the right people to handle the situation going on, trying to enforce the Logan Act on Flynn, which the Logan Act, it's never been done with anybody successfully, but it's looking like more damning information is coming out of that, but that happened after the election. That happened in the interim. So they knew they were going to try to take down the president. And one way to do it was through one of his guys. And they worked really hard to undermine his credibility during that time. You remember the stories. You remember the social media posts. You remember all of the condemnation. And they did a fairly effective job of it because a lot of people had their doubts about him going in, and they're rabid, staunch supporters of him now because they see what he's done. Actions speak louder than words and much louder than the lies told against the person who's actually doing the work. Well, lies are something that Barack Obama, that's something he's good at. He's very familiar with the process. And during his virtual grassroots fundraiser Tuesday of this week, Barack Obama falsely claimed that the 2009 swine flu, the H1N1, wasn't a pandemic at all. He tried to take credit for it not becoming one. Meanwhile, Joe Biden, who looked like he was just trying to stay awake, just sat there and nodded as if it were true. You get the link. It's in the show notes to this story. You can watch the video. He lies. Obama lies when he says, and dealing with issues like H1N1 that we feared could become a pandemic if it wasn't handled properly, as if they handled it properly so it didn't become a pandemic. Well, for starters, H1N1 was classified as a pandemic by the World Health Organization on June 11th, 2009. 2 weeks later, the CDC estimated that there were at least 1 million cases in the United States. So where Obama got the notion that it wasn't a pandemic is beyond comprehension. The CDC estimates that in the United States alone, there were nearly 61 million cases of H1N1, 274,304 hospitalizations, 12,469 deaths between April 12th of 2009 and April 10th of 2010. Ron Klain, who was Biden's chief of staff at the time and is currently advising his campaign, says it was mere luck that H1N1 wasn't more deadly. Quote, it is purely a fortuity that this isn't one of the great mass casualty events in American history. That's what he said of H1N1 in 2019. He goes on to say it had nothing to do with us doing anything right. It just had to do with luck. If anyone thinks that this can't happen again, they don't have to go back to 1918. They just have to go back to 2009, 2010, and imagine a virus with a different lethality, and you can just do the math on that. But Obama wants you to forget that. What Barack Obama was trying to do was take a page right out of George Orwell's 1984 and rewrite history. Because the Obama administration's handling of the H1N1 pandemic was completely botched. Based on these numbers, H1N1 had a mortality rate of 0.02%. According to the CDC's latest estimate, the coronavirus has an overall mortality rate of 0.4% for symptomatic cases, or 0.26% if you include asymptomatic cases, meaning that the coronavirus is 13 to 20 times more deadly than H1N1. So the coronavirus is not only magnitudes more deadly than H1N1, but also more infectious. According to a study from Emerging Infectious Diseases, COVID-19 has a median R-value. That's a mathematical term of how contagious a disease actually is. It has a median R-value of 5.7. H1N1 had an R-value between 1.4 and 1.6. So COVID-19 is nearly four times more infectious, 13 to 20 times more deadly than H1N1. So yes, Obama and Biden were, as Ron Klain put it, lucky. If H1N1 was as infectious as the coronavirus and had the same mortality rate as the coronavirus, there would have been 231 million infections. That's 70% of the country. And 600,704 deaths. But remember, Obama said they feared H1N1 could become a pandemic if it wasn't handled properly. It wasn't handled properly. Not by a long shot. He just hopes you'll forget the facts just because H1N1 was significantly less infectious and less fatal than COVID-19. Obama also doesn't want you to remember the fact that his administration predicted in the summer of 2009 that they would have 160 million H1N1 vaccine doses by late October, but ended up with fewer than 30 million. According to a study by Purdue, that failure cost lives. The vaccine arrived too late to help most Americans. The Obama administration botched it badly. But they're rewriting history so you don't remember it that way.
One! All right! Come on!
Welcome back. It's the Daily Perspective Podcast. I mentioned Michael Flynn a little while ago. The federal appeals court yesterday ordered a lower court to allow the case against former national security advisor Michael Flynn to be dismissed, as requested by the Justice Department, likely ending the years-long legal saga stemming from the Russia investigation. Just one more facet of the Democrat attempt to take down a president. It's been destroyed. The abrupt ending came in a 2-1 ruling and order from judges on the U.S. Court of Appeals for the District of Columbia. This was the result of an appeal from Flynn's lawyers asking for a so-called writ of mandamus, essentially an order telling a government official to carry out a certain duty, directing district Judge Emmett Sullivan to approve the DOJ's motion to dismiss. So basically, just to sum that one little paragraph up, the writ of mandamus, you hear these legal terms all the time. And what that actually means is, in essence, a government official has been ordered to do something and he's refusing to do it. And so they take the scenario before a panel of judges. And now he's ordered by other people. Under legal authority, compounding what he's already been told to do. Do your job. And finally, it's happening. Sullivan didn't immediately grant that motion, instead sought to hold hearings on the matter. That angered Flynn's allies. The unusual move from Sullivan to keep the case alive despite prosecutors' wishes was preceded by an unusual move from the DOJ itself to drop the charges against Flynn. Even after he'd pleaded guilty, saying the FBI interview that led to his charge of lying to investigators about his contacts with Russia's ambassador had no legitimate investigative basis. It's unclear, and this is one of the things that your liberal friends keep throwing back in your faces. He pled guilty! Guilty! And yeah, he was forced into a corner. He lost everything, lost his home, lost possessions, had to sell off so many things because of the expense of the legal battle. They were threatening to go after his family. And so he stepped up and said, okay, to protect his family, to protect his son, he stepped in and pled guilty. He was forced into a corner and had no choice but to either plead guilty or allow these corrupt politically motivated people to destroy his family. Yeah, he pled guilty to protect his family. So your liberal friends can go pound sand, take a flying leap, because they wouldn't do that. They would turn their families over and let them be destroyed by the government. It's unclear whether Sullivan could try to appeal to the full appeals court or even to the Supreme Court in order to keep the case alive. The next step otherwise would likely be for Sullivan to comply. Yesterday's court order was direct, ordering, quote, that Flynn's petition for a writ of mandamus be granted. In part, the district court is directed to grant the government's motion to dismiss, and the district court's order appointing an amicus is hereby vacated as moot in accordance with the opinion of the court filed herein this date. Flynn dialed into Rush Limbaugh's radio show yesterday. He broke his silence on the case, called the decision a good thing for him and his family, but a great boost of confidence for the American people and our justice system, while touting his lawyer, Sidney Powell, as a terrific lawyer and the American guardian of justice. President Trump cheered the decision. Yesterday morning, he tweeted, "Great, appeals court upholds Justice Department's request to drop criminal case against General Michael Flynn." A senior DOJ official told Fox News, "The department is pleased by the appeals court decision in the Flynn case. The accompanying decision essentially backed federal prosecutors in their move to drop the case." Judge Naomi Rao, a Trump appointee, wrote in the decision, "In this case, the district court's actions will result in specific harms to the exercise of the executive branch's exclusive prosecutorial power. The contemplated proceedings would likely require the executive to reveal the internal deliberative process behind its exercise of prosecutorial discretion, interfering with the Article II charging authority." Judge Robert Wilkins, who dissented, wrote, "It is a great irony that in finding the district court to have exceeded its jurisdiction, this court so grievously oversteps its own. This appears to be the first time that we have issued a writ of mandamus to compel a district court to rule in a particular manner on a motion without first giving the lower court a reasonable opportunity to issue its own ruling." Of the DOJ's move to abandon the case, he also adds, "This is no mere about-face. It is more akin to turning around an aircraft carrier." The Democrats, meanwhile, have slammed the DOJ decision, cited it as an example of the department becoming politicized under Attorney General Bill Barr. The Justice Department last month made the stunning move to drop its case against Flynn after a considered review of all the facts and circumstances of the case, including newly discovered and disclosed information, as the department put it. The DOJ official said they concluded that Flynn's interview by the FBI was untethered to and unjustified by the FBI's counterintelligence investigation into Mr. Flynn, and that the interview was conducted without any legitimate investigative basis, while arguing that Flynn's statements were not material, even if untrue. Now, this motion to dismiss came after unsealed FBI notes revealed that there had been a question regarding what the purpose of Flynn's interview was, whether the aim was to find out the truth or to get him to lie and thus subject him to being prosecuted or fired. Flynn ended up facing charges and being terminated from his role as National Security Advisor. The handwritten notes, which the FBI's former head of counterintelligence, Bill Priestap, penned after a meeting with then-FBI Director James Comey and then-FBI Deputy Director Andrew McCabe, showed officials discussing the fateful January 2017 interview in advance. They apparently discussed various options, including getting Flynn to admit to breaking the Logan Act when he spoke to former Russian Ambassador Sergei Kislyak during the presidential transition period. One of the notes read, "Was that our goal? Truth / admission, or get him to lie so we can prosecute him or get him fired?" Another note read, "If we get him to admit to breaking the Logan Act, give facts to DOJ and have them decide." The memo appeared to weigh the pros and cons of pursuing these different paths while cautioning, quote, "If seen as playing games, the White House will be furious." That in itself is interesting. Why would the White House be furious unless the White House had a stake in what was going on. The White House, meaning the Obama White House. Aside from being swiftly ensnared in special counsel Robert Mueller's investigation and the fallout from that interview, Flynn was fired from his prominent post as national security advisor in February 2017. The resignation came as he was accused of misleading Vice President Pence and other senior White House officials about his communications with Kislyak. Flynn's communications with Kislyak in December of 2016 had been picked up in wiretap discussions, apparently unbeknownst to him. The FBI agents in January 2017 questioned him on the communications and later used his answers to form the basis for the false statement charge and his guilty plea. The Director of National Intelligence, Don Ratcliffe, made transcripts of those wiretap calls between Flynn and Kislyak public earlier this month. That one statement exposes everything. If we're seen as playing games, the White House, will be furious. Good news for Flynn. Good news for himself and his family. Good news for justice in America. And those who are saying this is a politicization of the Justice Department, no. It's actually stripping back the politics and getting to the law. Leftists love to use that term, the rule of law. But they rarely abide by the law. In fact, you have to look no further than New York City, the Northeast and the West Coast, California, New York. These places are ignoring laws. They're turning a blind eye to the law, releasing convicted people from jail, putting them back in the mix of society, rearresting them time and time and time again. No bail. Bring them in. Let them go. And they go back out and inflict damage on the people once again, even though it's been proven again and again that the society, the people, would be safer with those people behind bars. But the politicians, playing upon the ignorance of the people that who will vote for them, keep saying that they're looking out for these people. In this particular case, we don't want them to become infected with COVID-19, with the coronavirus. I dare say that if they actually did a health screening of everyone who's been reoffending, they would find out they've had it. And I would say if they've had it, they should be put back behind bars. Honestly, they should be put back behind bars, even if they haven't had it. Because we're finding that the death rate is so low, and it's falling, that putting them back behind bars is not really an issue. It's just a political issue. It's a publicity issue. Because these people don't care about the rule of law unless they can use that phrase to sway the uninformed. And by the uninformed, I mean people who get all of their news and information from the evening news, from CNN, MSNBC. Those people who aren't actually getting the facts, they're getting the progressive interpretation of the facts. And they're being lied to. That's who's buying into the rule of law argument from the left. They don't mean it. They don't enforce it. Not with any consequence. Unless it happens to be against those they believe are their enemies. Such as Michael Flynn, because they can go through him to destroy the president who took their power away from them when Hillary Clinton should have won that election. It's the Daily Perspective Podcast. Hi there. diving into the final segment for this Thursday, 25th day of June 2020. Come on now, turn it up.
Lady, I can't sleep.
Come on.
I'm so nervous I can't keep the beat.
Huey Lewis.
Can't run, I can't hide.
Yeah.
In a damn shit, can't keep us satisfied.
Yeah, see, Facebook will block me later today. That's it. Oh, my goodness gracious. There have been threats to destroy a monument in Washington, D.C. Abraham Lincoln. A monument paid for by freed slaves, which commemorates their emancipation. Hundreds of National Guard troops have been ordered to deploy and protect monuments in D.C. at the request of Interior Secretary David Bernhardt. Interior Secretary David Bernhardt requested the action earlier this week as protesters target statues and other historical markers during ongoing demonstrations in the wake of George Floyd's police custody death in Minneapolis at the end of May. By the way, none of this, just so you know, none of this is about George Floyd. None of it. They keep using his name, but none of this is really about George Floyd. What it's about is anarchy. Just keep that in mind. The Pentagon confirmed that roughly 400 D.C. Guard members have been activated and are on standby. Lieutenant Colonel Christian Mitchell, a Pentagon spokesperson, said in a statement, since their activation, none of the National Guard members have been dispatched to actual monument locations to provide assistance to the NPP. They remain on standby at the D.C. Armory at this time. They will support U.S. Park Police at key monuments to prevent any defacing or destruction. He noted that the National Guard members are unarmed and will serve as uniform deterrence and in a crowd management capacity. Monday, protesters attempted to tear down a statue of Andrew Jackson in Lafayette Square, right there by the White House, defaced it with the phrase, "Killer scum." And Bernhardt said afterward that he visited Lafayette Square and witnessed the destruction. He said the country will not bow to anarchists and that law and order will prevail, justice will be served. The Lincoln Memorial and World War II Memorial were also defaced in earlier protests. It's about time the Guard has been ordered to protect the nation's most important statues and monuments. The looting and anarchy has gotten way too far out of hand. If some people think that certain monuments and statues need to be removed, then they have a peaceful conversation about it. They can do that. Toppling statues and monuments via the mob is illegal. Those responsible need to be prosecuted to the full extent of the law. That's 10 years in prison, by the way. A few high-profile arrests and prosecutions will slow down the mob. Letting them get away with it will only make things worse. A couple of days ago, Black Lives Matter activist Sean King, you remember him, Talcum X, called for tearing down all the white Jesus statues and stained glass windows. These people are deeply deluded, deeply deceived, and they've chosen to believe something that cannot be rationally supported. What they're trying to do is tear down a nation. If you listen to the founders of Black Lives Matter, their goal is to remove Trump from office. So when you get right down to it, that's what all of this is about. All of it. It's all about removing Donald Trump from office. Why? Because Hillary Clinton didn't win, and the left couldn't continue with their plans to fundamentally transform the United States of America. It's all about creating a bad situation so that they can stain the presidency of Donald Trump with it in some way to persuade the uninformed that they need to get rid of Donald Trump. Even the situation with Bubba Wallace and NASCAR.
If you be my bodyguard, I can be your long lost pal.
Oh, can I? Oh, that's awesome.
I can call you Betty, and Betty when you call me.
Al Sharpton, yesterday, contended the FBI findings concerning an apparent noose found in NASCAR driver Bubba Wallace's garage stall were incorrect. They're wrong, I tell you. He's called for a further investigation. Tuesday, the Daily Wire noted that the FBI concluded that Mr. Wallace, who is black, was not the victim of a hate crime. They noted that the garage pulley in question has been used in the garage since last fall, long before Wallace was assigned to the stall. Sharpton said on MSNBC, where he can get away with it without being questioned, it was a noose. So the question is, even if they did not know that Bubba Wallace was going to use that stall, why was a noose in the stall? I do not think we've seen closure in this particular inquiry. Mr. Sharpton, there's probably dozens of reasons that there would be a noose there. Not all of them are friendly or happy or comfortable, but the vast majority of them have nothing to do with racism. People have weird ideas about and fascinations, and they do bizarre things, sometimes intentionally, sometimes absently. But people like you, Mr. Sharpton, can I call you Al? Mr. Sharpton, people like you capitalize on everything that can be interpreted as being negative. And people like you keep people stirred up over things that really don't matter in the big picture, because it keeps you in the spotlight and it keeps your pockets full of cash. National Review editor Charles Cook called Sharpton's commentary deeply irresponsible. Tuesday, NASCAR published a statement. I read this to you yesterday. I'm not going to go back over it again. But according to Sharpton, Bubba Wallace is also not satisfied with the FBI findings. And clearly, from what we just saw from Bubba Wallace, it does not seem he, who is the victim and possible target of this matter, seems to be satisfied with this, he said during that MSNBC appearance. Wallace told NBC earlier Wednesday morning, quote, "The photo evidence I've seen and have in my possession shows it was a garage pull that was a noose. It was definitely in the shape of a noose. It wasn't a functioning noose." Well, you know what? There are loops tied in many of those garage pulls. We've seen the pictures. It seems to be a fairly common practice to tie a loop in the end of the rope. Makes it easier to grab. Slip your fingers into that and pull. And the garage door starts coming down. And then you follow up by grabbing more of the rope as it falls. But, or going up, whichever way that works. But somebody, rather than just tying a loop or tying a knot to hold a loop at the bottom, decided it would be clever to tie a knot that looks like a noose. And someone who is a Black Lives Matter activist, a sympathizer, who drives a NASCAR vehicle sponsored, or if it's not sponsored by, it carries the Black Lives Matter name all over it. He's promoting Black Lives Matter. He's assigned to a garage where someone has tied a noose in the end of the garage pull rope. The door pull rope. He never sees it personally himself. Just one of his team members sees it. And the next thing you know, he's all up in arms about it. And it's a racist statement against him. Yesterday, later, he seemed to soften from that, saying something to the effect that we'll take a little embarrassment over what it could have been. So he's acknowledging it probably wasn't intended as a racist thing, and it wasn't pointed towards him. But that's not enough for Al Sharpton. Not enough for him. Not at all. You see, Al Sharpton is one of those people described by others who wants to keep the sickness alive. He wants to keep the anger flowing. He wants to keep things stirred up because it's financially beneficial to him to do so. He keeps his name in the public eye He keeps getting called for interviews. He keeps getting cut checks by MSNBC. And his organization, the National Action Network, keeps getting donations. And he just keeps getting richer and richer and richer. Simply because he keeps people angry over things that they may not necessarily be rightful to be angry about. And that's how the left operates, my friend. And that's all for today. God bless you. Have a good one. Let's meet back here tomorrow for the Friday edition of the Daily Perspective Podcast. Won't you do that for me? God bless. Bye-bye.
Oh, we're done.